We're really blessed to have Bill and Pam Farrell, so I'll give you guys the floor. Thanks for being here.
So first of all, for Danny, thank you very much. Yes. Thanks for that intro, and thank you for being willing to tackle this whole ministry. We know things like this don't happen by accident, and you know as well as we do that helping marriages, you get down right in ground level, and sometimes it's very exciting, and sometimes it's messy, and thank you. Yeah, thank you for your commitment. And, yeah, and Chris, right? Yeah. Chris, where are you?
Oh, you'll have to share this later then.
Okay, I'll thank him later. Yeah. Anyway, it is great to be with you. We have a little bit of a history with Foothills. Every time we've got the opportunity to do something with Foothills, we have walked away and said, that was great.
That was like our family. I love those people. They are so honest. They're so real. They're so raw. They're so authentic. We love your body because there's no pretense here. Yeah. Like, I love people who are real, and that's y'all. And so we hope that we share at that same level this weekend with you, too. And, you know, we like to laugh while we learn. That's one of the things that we appreciate about you, too, because sometimes you laugh at our jokes, and that makes us happy. There is a little boy, and he was working with his dad. This is a friend of Bill's.
So this friend of mine, he's got an 8-year-old son. And, you know, often 8-year-old kids, they want to emulate their dad. And so they're in the kitchen making dinner, and this little boy, he wanted to do what dad was doing, so he reached up on the counter, and he pulled a jar off of the counter and tried to get the lid off of the jar and couldn't get the lid to move. And in frustration, he said, Dad, would you help me? So dad said, well, sure. He took the lid right off. And the little boy looked at his dad. He said, Dad, how come I couldn't get the lid off? And dad said, well, son, this jar that you pulled off the counter, it has a childproof cap on it. Little boy thought for a moment and said, Dad, how did it know it was me? Yeah, true story.
Yeah, God knows you, God knows your home, God knows your family, God knows everything about you. And so it's been our prayer that each one of you would go home with a personal post-it note from heaven to your heart, from heaven to your home. So be looking for your post-it note from God as we go through the weekend together. We're going to be talking about how to be connected, mm-hmm. you know, and that God holds all things together. And so I turn to your spouse and say, God holds you together.
God holds you together.
God holds me together.
God holds me together.
And then big old hug. God holds us together.
God holds us together.
And we have a ministry called LoveWise. Mm-hmm. It's the intersection of God's love and God's wisdom. And our theme for this weekend is going on a journey. Going on a journey to find that best love.
Because you know as well as I do, marriage is a matter of the heart. That when your hearts are connected, this marriage thing is pretty exciting. It's pretty fun. When your hearts get disconnected, then suddenly marriage starts to be difficult. And so one of the goals of a weekend like this is to help you get your hearts reconnected. Because when your hearts are connected, it's really fun. And there's lots of verses in the Bible that talk about it. One of our favorites is Philippians 1:7. That makes reference to the importance of this. Paul was writing to the Philippian church, and he said, it's right for me to feel this way about you all because I have you in my heart. And when marriage works at that level, when you carry each other in your heart, it's amazing what happens. And when you get disconnected in your heart, then you start to evaluate each other based on your behavior. And the problem at that point is that none of us can act good enough for long enough to meet up to the other person's expectations. So the real secret of marriage is keeping each other in your heart.
So how do you do that?
Yep. And this whole idea of connected, we get a clue on how to do this from Jesus' own words. That Jesus in Luke chapter 10, verse 27, gave these instructions. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Now the implication of this is that the way to love your neighbor is with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, because it's a reflection of your relationship with Jesus.
And your first neighbor is your spouse.
Exactly.
It's the neighbor who lives closest to you.
So we're going to talk about how to stay connected as couples in those four areas of life. And we're going to start with the wisdom of loving with all your heart. And the key to making this happen is actually shared with us in Ephesians chapter 5, and verse 33. Ephesians 5:33 says, each one of you must love his wife as he loves himself.
And the wife must respect or honor her husband.
Now, I want to ask you, everybody, time out. Chris, thank you.
Yes,
thank you for
sharing.
Like that moment when you responded to what the Holy Spirit was telling you may be the most significant moment in this weekend for a lot of people. So thank you for responding to that.
Yeah, okay? And I added to that, Chris. Yep. I turned to Bill and I said, I'm sorry for anything I've said that didn't match up to what God's identity of you is. I said, I'm sorry for the things I thought and didn't say that didn't match up. Yeah,
that was cool. So anyway, thank you.
Thanks for sparking that.
Thank you. Okay, so back to Ephesians 5. The obvious question is, why does God give different instructions to us husbands than he gives to you wives? Right? Because they're very different instructions. As men, we're told to love our wives as Christ loves the church. Those aren't the instructions given to the wives. The wives have completely different instructions. Now, the reason why is every marriage operates on a line of trust. And there is a primary need in the life of every woman that when that need gets met, it causes her to rise above this line of trust.
And there's a primary need in the heart of every man, and when that need gets met, he rises above that line of trust.
And when you as a couple are above this line of trust, marriage is pretty easy. Mm-hmm. Like up here you think, wow, I chose a great woman. And we communicate easily. We make decisions easily.
I give you the benefit of the doubt. Oh. There's lots of red hot monogamy going on.
Yeah, I mean, up here, life is easy and marriage is amazing. Now, you drop below this line of trust and suddenly everything starts to be awkward and difficult. And you come home and you say, honey, how you doing? And the answer you get is, what do you mean by that?
A lot of arguments, not much red-hot monogamy.
Yeah, down here people saying life is, like, a marriage is hard, it's a lot of work, it's very difficult, and we have noticed that couples can tell when they're above the line of trust, and they can tell when they're below the line of trust. It's just most people don't know what causes you to get above this. Okay, so we're going to tell you a couple stories just to prove to you that people know where they are with this line of trust. So you guys vote. We're going to tell you the story. You vote where these couples are above or below the line of trust.
Okay, so there's this newlywed husband, and it was their first anniversary, and they were going to plant, they were going to go out and do something really great, but it was during the work week. And so he got in his car, he was driving home, and he realized, wow, gridlock traffic. Can I get an amen on gridlock traffic? Right. Some of you are caught in that today. And so he was caught in this gridlock traffic. And so he picked up his cell phone. He's like, going to call his wife because, like, don't just be late a couple hours on your first anniversary. That does not go well. And so at least give her warning that there's traffic out here. Well, he picked it up, dead phone. And, like, no charger. I mean, he's in trouble now. And so he picks up a piece of paper and he jots down, like, he shoots up a prayer, like, God, help a guy out. And then he jots down this idea about his dilemma and his phone number, his home phone number, and he puts it up on the side window so passing motorists can see. And he finally makes it home. I mean, he's like 90 minutes late. And he finally makes it home. He doesn't know what he's going to get because he is late on his first anniversary. So he, like, kind of quietly comes in the house, and his wife, like, rushes to him, a big old hug, luscious long kiss. And she's like, oh, I so love you. And I know that you love me because at least 50 people called to tell me that today.
Mm-hmm. So is that couple above the line of trust or below the line of trust?
Yeah, way
above. Okay, this other couple left a social event, and while they were driving home, lights and sirens came on behind the car. So as the man is pulling over, he turns to his wife and he says, follow my lead, do exactly what I tell you to do. So they pull over, the officer comes to the window, says, sir, can I see your license and registration? Looked him over and said, are you aware that you've been speeding for a while? And the man said, well, no, I was going the speed limit. I looked at my speedometer. I was going the speed limit. Just ask my wife. She can corroborate. So he looked to the wife, said, ma'am, is that true? And she said, officer, I never argue with my husband when he's been drinking. Above the line or below the line?
Way below the line.
Yeah, so you can always tell where you are on this line of trust. The question is, what gets you above? Because if you can get above the line and stay there most of the time, you're going to find that marriage is a great journey.
This is a happy, joyful place above right. this line of trust.
And the secret is in Ephesians 5, and we got to thinking, okay, let's put it in terms that we can remember. So we decided to put this in terms of usernames and passwords, okay? Because we all deal with usernames and passwords on a regular basis. So guys, when we got married, we got our username. It's the name husband. And the password that gives you access to your wife's heart is the password security. And most of us guys think we know what security is, but honestly, we have a very narrow view of it. Okay, so like most of us say, well, yeah, my wife wants to be safe. And then we're like, look at me. Anybody messes with my wife, I'm taking them down. And we think, got it, check. Okay? This need in our wife's life, though, guys, it's much bigger than that. And the best way I know to describe it to you is your wife is asking a question every day of her life. It comes out in different forms. It comes in different ways. But it's pretty much the same question. The question is it safe to be who I am today around you? And it's based on the fact that women's lives are always changing.
Like, that's the one consistent in our life, is it's full of change, you know, because of that monthly cycle and then PMS and, you know, postpartum and then menopause. I mean, we're just always in a state of change.
Mm-hmm. And if I were to just illustrate it with Pam, like, there are days, like, I've noticed, there are days, Pam, that you are the most reasonable person I've ever met.
Thanks.
And I'm amazed on days like that. I can bring anything to you. We can work through any issue. We can celebrate together. We can work through problem decisions that we got to work. I mean, it's just easy working with you on those days. There are other days that Pam is the most intense person I have ever met. And everything needs to be, we got to get down, go. And there are other days that Pam is just kind of laid back and easygoing and just wants to lay in a hammock and read a book. And then there's some days in our home that there's a no-fly zone. And the only thing I ask on those days is, would you like flowers or chocolate?
That's right. 70% dark chocolate and a dozen roses or daffodils, like bonus points.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So it creates this need to ask the question, like, I know we were good yesterday. Are we good today? Is it safe to be who I am today? Because I'm a little different than I was yesterday. And it just creates this need to continually ask the question. And as guys, like, this is not a language we speak. You know, like, we tend to be more transactional. Like, we just want to get it settled. You know, like, I said yes to you. I married you because you're incredible. Can we, like, check it off, be done? It's that way forever. Like, we just want to settle it. And we also don't speak this safety language. Like, what's your first name?
Kyle,
great to meet you. Nice to meet you. Kyle, I'm probably not going to ask you if you feel safe this week. That's a dumb question, huh?
Yeah.
Like, as guys, we know safety somewhere on the list. Because you cannot live out your adventure if you're not alive, right? But it's certainly not in the top five. It's just a prerequisite somewhere down the list. And so when we get married, we suddenly start talking to an individual who speaks a different language than we do. And as men, we don't necessarily know what to do about it. But I can tell you, guys, it's always on the table. And I was actually introduced to this on my honeymoon. I didn't know I was being introduced to it. But the first time I saw this need in full action was the last day of our honeymoon.
Right, and we had gone out to, it was Lake Tahoe, and we went to one of those restaurants at the top, you know, of the hotel, and it was just beautiful. And then we came home, and we did what honeymooners do, a little red hot monogamy. And by now, it was like, you know, well past midnight, and I had Bill's attention, so I thought he wanted to know everything about his new spouse. So I started sharing everything about my life I could think of, including, like, every boy I've ever had a crush on since kindergarten, and somewhere around, you know, grade 6 or 7, Bill fell asleep. And I'm like, started to cry, you know, shaking the bed, crying loud on purpose to try to wake him up crying, you know. And so I'm crying, and he wakes up.
Like, Pam, why are you crying? Like, I thought we had a great day and a great night, and it's been a great week, and now you're like sobbing. What's wrong?
Well, obviously, I'm, like, totally bored you. I mean, we've only been married a week, and you fell asleep on me.
But bored? Pam, you're the most incredible person I've ever met. I fell asleep because I really was just tired.
And I found out, you know, guys always fall asleep after good sex, so I should have taken it as a compliment. But sidebar.
Well, let's close in prayer. No, go, go.
Oh, you're like interested in me?
Of course.
Awesome. Okay. So then I started singing every country and western song I had known growing up. And the night ended about probably 3 a.m. with me standing on the bed with my hairbrush singing Stand By Your Man. And I finally let the guy go to sleep. And about 6 a.m, I rolled over and he wasn't in bed. I'm like, oh no, I've driven him from bed again. And I looked out the window and like the good guy, he was out there. There was a blizzard in Lake Tahoe because we got married in December. And there was like, you know, 3 feet of snow and he's trying to dig our car out so we can go catch a flight. And I get in the car and I'm like, oh, you're such a good man. If there's like a husband test, you totally pass it with like an A+, and I will never test you again.
Now, I think that comment was sincere. It's just neither one of us had enough respect for the strength of this need. Because honestly, guys, the only way I know to describe this to you is your wife wants to feel secure around you as often as you would like to have sex with her. It's just always on the table. It's always being asked. And I have learned that if you meet the security need first, everything else is easy. Like, as long as that need gets met, everything after that goes pretty well. But if you ignore the security need, everything gets to be a problem. And I don't want you to think this was just a honeymoon need.
Oh, no.
In our life. Like, this is
going.
It just keeps going. Like recently, we got together. Okay, so guys, can I get a witness on this? We said to each other, hey, let's put together a new seminar. Let's meet in the office at the computer to develop a new seminar. Okay, is that clear to you guys? Okay, we're going to meet in the office at the computer, prepare a seminar. Okay, so I came laser focused. Like, I am ready to go. I am ready for action. We're going to knock this thing out. So we sit down at the computer. We pray. And I say, hey, Pam, I've been thinking about this. And what do you think if we start the seminar right here? I think this would, like, really just kick things off for you. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't think that's really the direction that we want to go. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was thinking about halfway through, we might put this right in here because I think it would be a great activity for the couples. What do you think?
It's kind of just guy-like. I'm not sure the women would relate to that. Yeah. No. I don't think it's it yet.
Okay, well, I was thinking maybe at the end we kind of end like this right here, put a nice exclamation point on the conference. What do you think of that?
Yeah, thanks for the idea, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Okay, so folks, at this point, I'm starting to get pretty frustrated because I'm thinking not all of my ideas can be bad. Okay, and I was just about to say something I knew I would regret. So I just prayed real quick. God, can you help me out? Can you give me something different to say than what I'm thinking right now? And this, thank God, this thought came to mind. And I just turned to Pam and I said, so you've really been missing me lately, haven't you?
Yes, like how did you know that? I wish, like, you know, you're so busy as a pastor and it's all good. And so, like, how can you argue with God? I mean, you're like a good guy doing a good thing. But yeah, I miss you. I wish we could be like away in Hawaii, like curled up in a hammock watching the sunset. Yeah, I would love that. It would feel so good to have that kind of time. Yeah, sounds okay. Good. Yeah.
So I started thinking, well, the real project today is Pam. And we're not going to get any work done. So I'm just shutting down all the work boxes and getting myself out of that focus. And I just said, okay, Pam, it's fine. You know what? We're just going to focus on you and our relationship, and we'll get to the seminar later. And I just turned to Pam, and I focused all my attention on her. And after about 20 minutes, she said,
You know, I totally think we could knock this out. Like, let's jump back in.
You know what,
I think
Pam?
We can get this. I think we're in a good place. Let's just, like, let's do it. I mean, you took your time from church to come do this, and I want to be honoring of that. And, yes, let's just do it.
Well,
we can do it.
Thanks, but we really don't need to. Like, you are way more important to me than this seminar, and if you need more time, I'm more than willing to give it to you. So let's not just take the pressure off, and let's make this an our day.
I'm not feeling pressure, and I'm feeling love. So, like, yeah, let's jump in. Woo! Yeah.
You're sure?
Uh-huh. Positive. Yep.
Totally positive.
I am.
Okay, so what do you think if we start the seminar right here? What do you think?
I think that's really great.
Really?
I think it's pretty innovative. Really? I do.
And if halfway through we do this activity right here with the couples, what do you think of
that
one?
Oh, they will connect so well.
Really?
That is so, you're so wise. I love the stuff you come up
and
with.
And if we end over here, you know, with this exclamation point, that one's going to work
brilliant.
Too.
Brilliant.
Folks, it's the same ideas. Same exact stuff. The only thing that changed is we got the security need met. And it transformed things, connected our hearts, and now suddenly doing the seminar above the line of trust was easy. And we didn't spend any more time than we were planning. Like, because we were in sync, things went so quickly, the time we'd set aside for the meeting, we didn't go beyond it. It was just a remarkable thing. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that's powerful in marriage, is when you get this need met. So for us guys, one of the big things it means to love our wives as Christ loves the church is to make her feel secure in however she's doing today. You know, when she's having those great days, we applaud her. When she's having rough days, we celebrate her. When she's very reasonable, we make decisions. When she's not being reasonable, we just hug her and hang out with her. Like, we just give her the message, it's okay to be who you are today around me. Because it creates this environment of security that makes everything else go. And at first, you're going to feel like, I'm wasting time doing this. But when your wife kicks into gear, it's like a tornado coming through the house and stuff gets done fast. Okay, so it's well worth the investment. And
a beautiful tornado. Yeah, and Bill, when my book 52 Ways to Wow Your Husband came out, a lot of women were encouraged by it, but some women like pushed back, like, wow him, he should be wowing me. And so Bill, he created an app for that.
Right.
There's an app for that.
So guys, if you're wondering, gosh, how do I keep this going? Because to make it really simple, the A, B, C, and D of helping your wife feel loved, anytime you alleviate stress in her life. Many of you have heard us talk about the men are like waffles, women are like spaghetti. Well, the spaghetti thing is your wife's life's all connected. And so the average woman, her life grows. The more people she talks to, the more things she gets involved in, her life grows. And so she feels stress on a regular basis. Anytime you alleviate stress in her life, she's going to feel loved. Or anytime you make her feel beautiful, anytime you make her feel competent, or anytime you make her feel desired, she will feel loved. So that's the beginning of how to make this happen. And again, the app looks like this. You can get it on iPhone or Android. And this is all based on the research we've done with couples, broken down into daily ideas. So it's the simplest app I think you'll ever own. It's one idea a day that comes to your phone on how to be your wife's best friend.
Sometimes
sometimes it's addressing these four things. Sometimes it's prayer prompts. Sometimes it's ideas for dating. And the idea is, if you like today's idea, go with it. If you don't like today's idea, just let it go, because another idea is coming tomorrow. And ladies, help us out on this. I tried to put an estrogen filter on the app so that you couldn't look into it and test us. So just like help us out, because if you put this on your phone and go, hey, you didn't do this one. This one was really good. You didn't do it.
Counterproductive.
Yeah, then it's just not cool. Yeah, it's just not cool. Her best friend.
Herbestfriend.org.
Yep. And I'll just give you a quick preview. So ladies, you can kind of just help out. If your husband asked your wife, what clothes make you feel the most confident, and he took time to listen to you as you expressed that, would you like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the kind of stuff that is on there that helps you just connect with your wife and make her feel better about herself and about you. So anyway, her best friend, help you out if you want.
So if you seek to meet her security need first, she's going to be easier to live with and easier to love.
Mm-hmm.
And that will move you above that line of trust.
What about the guys?
And so we women, our username was wife. We got it when we got married. And the day we said I do, the password that gives us access to what's going on in his heart and life and mind is success. If we seek to meet that success need first, he's going to be easier to live with and easier to love. And this need for success, guys, needs success like in all areas of life. They want, you know, of course, financial success, and they want, you know, success with the kids. They want success at work. They would love success in the church or in the community, but they definitely want success success with you. The number one complaint we get voiced to us by men is there's no pleasing the woman. They don't know how to be successful with you, but they want to be successful with you. And like, ladies, Christmas is coming up, and like, we test our guys all the time. Just promise me when he asks you, what would you like for Christmas, don't say, well, you should just know me. I mean, you've been married this long to me. You should just know what to get me. Okay, they don't. Yep. So just, thank it's you. Okay. Help them out. Get, you know, take the catalogs that you love, dog ear the pages, put it on his bedside table, you know, write down the websites that are your favorite, give your girlfriend's, you know, cell number to your husband to call her for ideas if he really gets in a jam. So help a guy out. Because they want to be successful with you. And this need for success, sometimes it's called the male ego, and the male ego is, like, real. It was introduced to this, again, we just got back from our honeymoon, and we were at a pool party, because we lived in Bakersfield at the time, and everybody has pools, and so there was music, and Bill's a great dancer, and so he was, like, you know, whisking me around the pool, and then he did this big, like, dip move, boo, and then he dropped me on the ground. I'm laying on the ground, and I'm like, honey, why am I on the ground? And Bill said,
I just ripped my pants.
You guys, Bill just ripped his pants. Now, I thought it was funny. Our friends thought it was funny. Bill did not think it was funny. It was like a really long ride home, quiet silence. I learned something that day. Not a really good idea to point out your husband's flaw in public. Not even a really great idea in private, but definitely not a good idea in public. I should have helped him succeed at that moment instead. So I logged that away, okay? Help meet that success need. Years later, we come fast forward. We moved to San Diego from Bakersfield. And Bakersfield, Bill was a youth pastor at a mega church and with a good salary. And then we Bill took this position as a lead pastor in San Marcos at age 28. And his salary was a salary cut to take this position. And not only that, is the housing market was going up $10,000 a week during this time. And so in 6 weeks, $60,000, we were priced out of the market. And so I guess we're going to have to live in an apartment. We sold our house to come live in an apartment for a pay cut. And we have one car, and Bill was using it for work, and I had two little boys. And so I felt stuck and depressed. And after we moved into this apartment, we found out about the rule in this apartment complex is that kids were not allowed on the front porch, on the back porch, on the patio, on the sidewalk, on the grass. Like, kids couldn't exist, you know? And so I was depressed. And I went to get something out of the walk-in closet one day, and then I couldn't even remember what I went there for. And so I just sat down on this dirty load of laundry, and I started to cry. And my two little boys toddled in, and Brock, who was 4, and Zach was 2, Brock said, Mommy, what's wrong? And I very spiritually said, I don't know. And I just wrapped my arms around those two little guys and sat there on that dirty load of laundry, rocking back and forth and back and forth until they finally fell asleep. And then I took Zach and put him in his crib, and Brock and put him in his bed. And I went and I sat at the kitchen table and I said, God, this is ridiculous. I have like 2 healthy kids and I love them. And I have a husband who loves me right now. And it's kind of a miracle, because when he comes home every night, he hears, why did you do this to me? And how long do we have to live like this? And oh yeah, that makes him want to run home and spend time with me, God. God, you have to give me an answer to this pain. And I popped open my Bible to that familiar passage we started with, wives, honor your husband. And I remember saying to God, yeah, I'm pretty sure there should be a loophole for times like this. Like, I shouldn't have to honor Bill because he's making me miserable. And so I was pulling down my Bible study tools because I'm looking for the loophole so I don't have to opt into, you know, honoring Bill. I can find a way to opt out. But instead of finding out how to opt out of honor to Bill and respect, God showed me what it meant to opt in and honor my guy. And what God said to me that day through scripture was, Pam, I want you to see Bill as I see Bill, a man worthy of honor and respect because he's a gift from me to you. I was made for you. You were made for me, sweetheart. That's like good theology. I made him. I manufactured him for you. Pam, I want you to speak to Bill the way I would speak to Bill. Words that would build him up and encourage him and edify him. Pam, I want you to serve alongside Bill and be that helpmeet that I've called you to and help him succeed in this new pastorate. And so I called Bill up on the phone. I'm like, hey, you want to go to lunch? It was his birthday. Hey, you want to go to lunch? And he said,
I think so.
Because he wasn't sure what he's going to get, right? And so we go to lunch, and over lunch, I explain what God had taught me about that passage. And I said, you know what, honey, if I don't get all the new house, the new car, the new stuff, you know, if I don't get all the things I thought that I needed, you know, that's okay now. Because before God, you know, 100% from this moment on, I'm on your team, baby.
And if I were to show you what my internal reaction looked like, it would look something like, yes! Because the way God has made marriage, the most important opinion on earth to me is Pam. And if Pam says, Bill, you have got it going on. I mean, you got it. You are a man of God. You are in sync. It doesn't really matter what the rest of you say. Because if you criticize me at that point, I'd say, well, you guys don't get it. Because she said, I got it together. And if all of you say, Bill, you are doing great. And Pam's response is, eh. What I hear in my heart is, eh, yeah. So that day when Pam said, you're on my team and we are in this together, I don't really know how to explain it to you, but I changed. Yeah, I became a better pastor. I started working less hours and getting more done. I became more attentive at home. I figured out very quickly how to move us out of the apartment we were in and got us into a house that had a yard on it so that our boys could use their big muscles. And that same year, we committed to build a house up in North County so we could build roots in the community. And I knew I was working harder, but it felt easier because I knew Pam had my back. And that's what happens when you get in sync. Well, you get above that line of trust, and a man who is convinced that his wife believes in him and is going to help do whatever it takes to help him succeed at the things God's put on his heart, there's this energizing quality to it that's hard to put in words, but I experienced it that day. Yep. And so these needs never go away. I'd love to tell you, Pam and I are going to have our 40th anniversary in December. I'd love to tell you that these needs have calmed down in our life. They're just as strong today as they were the day we got married.
We can just pinpoint them faster and verbalize them better.
So you want to keep these in mind all the time. And to help you kind of focus on that, I want you to ask yourself, have you ever had a day that looked a little bit like this couple right here?
I hope the kids are behaving themselves at your parents' house.
You know, Dad's probably got them out in the backyard in a tent, and he's probably telling them all those same crazy stories he told me when I was a kid.
He does love his buddies. What are you thinking?
Wow, now that's a pretty loaded question there, Larry. What do you think he's going to do next?
Well, he's been in the same situation before, Mike, and with some mixed results. I've heard it said that the best offense is a good defense. I think he should reverse the question on her. That way, he has her response to build his strategy on.
Sounds like a pretty risky move, Larry. Let's see how he responds here.
Let's look.
I was just thinking that maybe it's time to start to rotate the tires on the truck.
Ooh, he totally botched that play, Larry.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, such a simple question, and yet it brings terror into the lives of every husband. What do you think happened?
Plain and simple, Larry, the man choked. I mean, we know there was nothing in his head when she asked that question. I mean, the vault was empty, but he's been busted for that before.
Ah, you are absolutely right. He panicked and went with the first thing that popped into his head. Let's see how he recovers.
Do you love me?
I can't believe she did it.
We react this way every time, Larry. Really, no surprise here.
He's doomed. It's over. The fans are leaving the stadium.
It's not over till it's over, Larry. We've seen him in tougher binds than this before. Let's take a look.
Sweetheart, you are the love of my life. You mean everything to me. Everything I do it for you.
Oh, what an amazing comeback.
It was a bit hairy, Larry, but I tell you, I think you came through with flying colors anyhow.
I don't know about using a song lyric, but it seemed to have worked. Let's see where this takes him.
Do I look fat in these jeans?
What?
This could be the end of the line.
I can't watch anymore, Larry.
That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
One step forward, two steps back.
You said it, Larry, not me. He panicked. And though this should have been the most practiced play of them all, we all know when it's coming, yet time after time, we choke.
This is classic. I mean, because of past mistakes, husbands tend to overcompensate, and it comes out a mess. Let's see her response.
So now I'm stupid.
Oh, no, that's...
I can't believe you.
Well, that's not what I meant.
Here comes temptation down the trail.
Okay, surely he won't fall for this one, Larry.
Do you think she's prettier than me?
Why?
It's over, Larry. And no Hail Mary's gonna save this guy.
Oh, it's not impossible, Mike. Here comes the response.
Look, I thought I recognized her was all. You know what? You are the most beautiful woman in the world to me. I can't even notice anybody else because all I think about is you.
That is the most beautiful thing you've ever said to me.
Ooh, I don't believe it. He completely nailed that one and turned everything around.
I've never seen anything like it, Larry.
He's got it from here. Nothing can stop him now.
What would you do if I died?
Okay, so we're gonna give you opportunities for a connection every time we get together. And so the question tonight is, husbands, what's one thing your wife does that makes you feel more successful? And then wives, what is one thing your husband does that makes you feel more secure? And so either of you can go first, but just take a moment. We have some romantic music in the background and answer those questions, would you?
Okay, go ahead and work your way back. So loving with all your heart and keeping your hearts connected, one way to do that is to get above that line of trust and get those primary needs met on a regular basis. And we just want to encourage you, these needs that get you above the line of trust, like they're so integral to who we are that you can jump above this line pretty quickly. So if you drop below the line of trust, you don't want to get too frustrated, because all it takes is one breakthrough moment to get above this line of trust. Like one of the amazing things about marriage is the Bible says it's a reflection of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And in the gospel, in a moment in time, you can go from being God's enemy to being God's friend and a member of the family. And in the same way, marriage can go from being difficult to suddenly it's working really well because you crossed over this line of trust.
Like you're just one breakthrough away. Our son is a football coach. Arizona Football Coach of the Year. Yes, I'm just a little proud. Yeah, but tonight he's coaching, you know, and so just picture a football game. It's Friday night, and that's the red zone, so the 10 yards right before the end zone, and it is nasty there. It's like pushing and shoving and a lot of trash talking, but then boom, you cross that line. It's like, hello, celebration. Yeah, and so that's what it's like. And when you have that breakthrough, only both of you win. Right. Like in football, only one person wins. Right. But the Holy Spirit has worked it out. When you cross that line of trust, you both get the victory, right?
As long as you don't move the line, you can cross over it. The other way that's really effective at loving with all your heart is to honor your growth. Because the reality of your marriage is it changes every 7 to 10 years because you become different people. And a lot of people get frustrated, like, see that as a problem. It's actually not a problem. It's built into the system to help you renew your marriage every 7 to 10 years. So I like to tell people, I've been married to 5 different people, and they're all named Pam. Because the seasons of life change. And there's a lot of verses in the Bible that talk about the fact that you are on a journey, that your life is not static. It doesn't stay the same throughout all the years. You're on a journey. And a few of those passages, Psalm 37:25, I was young and now I am old, yet I've never seen the righteous forsaken or their children begging bread.
In Ecclesiastes, it says there's a time and a season for everything. For everything, turn, there is a season. So there's seasons of life.
And 2 Peter 3:18 says, grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. The reason why we need to grow is because life changes. And if you keep up with the changes of life, every season is pretty exciting. If you don't keep up with them, then the seasons can get overwhelming. Like if you weren't aware of it, the average adult in North America doubles his or her responsibility level every 10 years. So at 30, you have twice the responsibility you had at 20. At 40, you have 4 times the responsibility you had at 20. Now, if you are growing into it, it's exciting because all that responsibility comes with opportunity. But if you're not growing into it, then it gets overwhelming. So when you honor your growth as a couple and you say to one another, hey, we're going to enjoy life through all the seasons and we're going to find the newness in every season, keeps your hearts connected as your life grows. And we're going to admittedly oversimplify this discussion because in order to talk about it, it's easier if you simplify it. So we're going to talk about decades. Okay, so we're just kind of assume every 10 years or so, your relationship changes. And it's very clear from research that God has a different purpose for your marriage in each of these decades. Okay, so the 20s. 20s is a time to be idealistic. Like we love periodically spending time with people who are in their 20s because they talk different. You know, 20-somethings, they talk big, like, God is awesome, God is amazing, God can do this, we can make this happen, we're going to launch out in life, and we're going to build a home and a family, we're going to have kids, and we're going to change our world.
In our generation, we're going to reach the world.
And it's even more pronounced today because of technology, because you can talk to people around the world in an instant. Like, just this morning, I had an hour meeting with a friend of mine that pastors in Colombia, and we were having a video conference with each other. It's amazing what's going on today. And people in their 20s are like, man, we can do this because God is huge and God is amazing. And you know, those of us who are not in our 20s, we feel some need to temper these people. Like, well, you know, we're glad you have all this, but you know, you got to be realistic about things. And honestly, folks, we need to stop doing that, because what God is doing with people in their 20s is he's building faith. And Hebrews 11:6 says, without faith, it's impossible to please God, because those who come to him must believe that he is, and he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And what God's doing in the lives of 20-somethings is he's trying to infuse faith into your life and make it strong enough that it lasts the rest of your life. Okay, like, we don't want a bunch of grumpy 16, 17-year-olds go, yeah, I used to think God was pretty good, but life's been too hard, and I think he forgot about me. No, we want faith that's so strong in your 20s that you're like, oh, yeah, we face some challenges, but you know what? God can do this. And so God's infusing that into the life of 20-somethings, and we need to encourage that. We need to look them in the eyes and say, you're right, God is that big, and God can do all that. In fact, do we have any people here in their 20s?
Yeah, awesome.
Okay, so all of you who are in your 20s, you can do it. Okay, God's big enough, that dream that's on your heart, it can happen. Okay, God's plenty big enough and you're plenty strong enough. God can do this. Don't let anybody convince you he can't, because he is as big as you think he is in your heart.
That's right.
Okay, and we need to infuse that into 20-somethings so they build the faith that lasts through all the seasons of life.
And those are pictures of our kids, and Bill and I, Bill with the big hair.
Woo!
And we were all in our 20s when we got married. Bill and I were 20, exactly, yep. When we got married. And, you know, it's funny, in your 20s, you're like, oh, we'll never fight. Right. Other people fight. All we need is love, 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 love will keep us together. Yeah. In our 20s, right after that picture was taken, we had one car, and it broke down, and we had no car. We were riding bicycles to finish our college education and be youth pastors. And our youth group, we had so much faith in a big God that God was going to provide a car. We were not going to have to, stop school because we needed to get to seminary to become pastors. So we were going to ride our bikes if necessary all the way. And our youth group was so sweet. They bought us a bumper sticker for a car that we did not have yet. And it said, I believe in miracles. And that youth group prayed with us every Wednesday night and every Sunday morning that God would provide a car for 5 months. And about my birthday in May, one of the parents called and said, hey, my mom just passed away. She has this car. We'll want to just give it to you, but it does need a brake job for $64.57. We had about, $65 to our name. And so God gave us the car. It was like a great moment when the youth group and us all, a couple hundred kids gathered around that car, putting on that bumper sticker. And I look back now, we couldn't do what we're doing today had we not had people around us that cheered us on, that crazy faith, as my son calls it now.
A 1972 aquamarine Chevy Impala with a Landau top.
Yeah, don't be jealous.
Yep, the trunk was big enough we could have slept in it if we lost our apartment. Right. It was amazing. Okay, but we don't stay in our 20s. Okay, we keep going. And when you get to be your 30s, your 30s are a time to be industrious. Okay, what God does in most people's lives in their 30s is you're starting to pick up momentum in your life. You probably got a house, you've got kids, you've got bills that are rolling along, and you've got strength. The Bible talks about it's good to bear your burden in your youth. That youth is not 12 and 13-year-olds. Youth refers to people who are under 40. Okay, so this is a time when it is time to build your life. It's time to get after it. It's time to work hard. It's time to figure out what is it on your heart that you could do full force and wholehearted and get after it. And I know when I was in my 30s, I would go to bed every night because I knew you were supposed to. Today I go to bed because I'm done. Right? But in my 30s, I could just go. Like, I had this gear I could kick into and I could go as long as I needed to. Like the time when we built our house, Pam was pregnant while we were building the house. I was bound and determined to get the house finished before the baby came. I didn't make it by a few days,
so
but...
So what happened is, like, it became like a race. The newspaper put up, like, an article about us. Like, what's going to come first, the baby or the house? Mm-hmm. Is the store going to make it? Are they going to get the house done? I mean, the whole city was coming by and checking on us, like, a daily basis. All the carpenters and all the contractors, hey, I need, you know, some help. I'll, like, jump in for a couple hours. And they were pulling for us, right? And, but Bill, in order to get our permit, we had to plant the banks and put sprinklers in. And he put those sprinklers in, and he stayed up three straight days in a row, zero sleep.
Because I could.
Yeah. And so I had a C-section, and after the baby came, Bill, like, fell asleep more like died and collapsed into that chair
coma.
That folds out, that's like a bed. So uncomfortable. But he was like out, and the baby was crying, and I'm like, honey, you know, I wasn't supposed to get out of bed. I had a C-section, but I mean, he was dead to the world. And so I got out of bed and then got the baby fixed and taken care of, and put the baby back after nursing him, and my IV came out. And so there's blood, like, spraying everywhere. And so I'm like, honey, like, nothing. And so I grabbed my, little IV stand, and I waddled down to the nurse's station. They're like, what are you doing up? You're not supposed to be doing up. Well, my husband, he's like, passed out. And the nurse is like, yeah, you can't trust those men. She's all hate on men all the way down the hall. And I said, well, actually, you can, because he, like, the reason he's so tired is because he stayed up three straight days to, like, try to get our house done so we could bring the baby to the house. And he hammered that thing together, you know, by himself. And he is a good man. And she's like, yeah, he is a good man. We're just going to let him sleep. We'll just take care of this baby. Yeah.
Yeah. So do we have any folks here in your 30s? Hey, don't be afraid of hard work, folks. It's a great time of life. It is I'm sure God's building a dream in your heart, because when you're young, you kind of have this dream of what could be done. In your 30s, you start to get a dream of what must be done. Okay? Because you start to realize life's going to cost you a fortune.
Yeah, because after we moved into that house.
Yeah. Yeah, we raised three athletic boys, and we saw the day that our food bill and our mortgage were identical. Yeah. And again, if it's your family, you rise to the occasion.
You remember the bank that had the sprinklers one day, Bill?
So I had spent this year building the house, pastoring the church, and I was exhausted. My goal was to get in the house for the next year, eat, go to work, sleep. That's all I was going to do. Well, 2 months into that plan, I drove home, drove into the driveway. Something flew over the windshield of my car. I looked in the backyard. There's my two older boys with a friend of theirs with baseball bats practicing their golf swing on my sprinkler heads. I forgot for a moment I was a pastor. Regathered myself. Had just enough for, like,
presence of mind.
Thank you. To say to them, get in the house before I do something we all regret. Go! And they dropped their bats and ran.
And so the boys came in. I'm like, hey, didn't I hear your dad's car? Where is he? And they're like, I don't know. I don't know where dad is. I don't know. And so I went outside, and I saw Bill walking around the property, like, muttering to himself.
I'd rather have kids than sprinklers. It took me an hour to convince myself that I'd rather have kids than sprinklers. I had counted the sprinkler heads, folks. We had 38 sprinkler heads on our property. There were 14 left. Thank you. So I realized, not only am I going to have to build my life, I'm going to have to rebuild it, because my kids are going to break everything I own. And again, at this point, you either run away or you rise to the occasion. And this is a time where you just rise, and God helps you find your potential.
And tomorrow, so in the parenting class, we'll tell you what those boys had to do because of their misbehavior. yes. So the next stage, that's a picture of our boys that are in this stage right now, and Bill and I, and that's at that stage. So the next stage is the 40s, and it's your time to be intense. And in your 40s, it's like, a lot of things stack up in your life, but, you know, it's kind of funny, too, some of the things that happened in your 40s, a lot of changes. For example, you might be in midlife if you think you still look 20-something from the back at night in the fog. You might be a person in midlife if you can look at a glass half empty, you can look at the glass half full, or you can look at the glass and wonder, huh, did I drink my soy milk today? You might be a person in midlife if you say, yes, this is the year I'm going to be adventurous. I'm going to get a tattoo of my address and phone number. Not only attractive, but very useful in memory emergencies, right?
And folks, at this time of life in North America, things tend to just kind of stack up. And it just gets to be this really focused time.
For example, I was writing 10 Secrets. It was originally called Fantastic After 40, 10 Secrets of Living Strong, Smart, and Savvy. When I writing this book for women in life's second half. And I was a director of women's ministry. And I saw all of the stress that women in their 40s about that midlife time had to deal with. I mean, if you time it really, really well, you are dealing with tweens and teens, or maybe you had a bonus baby after 40. So now you have a toddler and hot flashes. Life can be tough. If you think about all the pressures, you're paying for things like cars and kids and graduations and weddings and grandchildren, and so a lot of financial stress on you as well. And then there's over 100 symptoms of perimenopause and menopause, anxiety, or your skin starts itching and your hair thins out, and I have to cross my legs when I laugh. Really? Yeah.
And again, as things are stacking up, another thing that makes this an intense time is, as men, we get targeted during this time. Okay, a number of things happen in men's lives that make this a very intense time. First thing that happens is men's bodies start to change. And ladies, you're forced to deal with that. Whether you consider it a gift or a curse, you're forced to deal with change. As men, it's a foreign concept to us. We go through puberty and all this stuff happens. And then we get loaded up with testosterone and we just motor ahead for decades. Okay, and ladies, there's no way for you to know what it's like to have high levels of testosterone in your body. I mean, we feel invincible. We feel like we can pull nails out with our fingernails. We can lift weight with our hair. We can run through brick walls if we have to. And, if we jump off the wall, the second story of the house, even if we hurt ourselves, we're going to recover so quickly, it's like it didn't happen. We just get used to powering through everything. And then suddenly testosterone levels start to change. And we start to see traits in us that are foreign. We cry at movies. We're like, what is this? Oh my goodness! I watched. Have you seen When the Game Stands Tall? Yeah. Okay, I got two kids in coaching. All three of my kids were in sports. I cried twice. I saw the movie twice
on an airplane.
Both times on the airplane, crying in public. I'm like, oh my goodness! And so we don't know what to do with that. It kind of throws us off. And then we get hit with the fact that we're not invincible. We're actually mortal. And it either happens because of a health crisis in our life or a health crisis in someone close to us. I remember when it happened in my circle of friends. Hey, if you're in your 40s, can you raise your hand real quick? Can you keep your hands up for a moment? Can I borrow you? I'm not going to embarrass you. Okay. Come on up. So let's hear it for Jerome. Yeah. Jerome, come on up here. Okay, my friend who was just almost halfway to 41 looked like Jerome. Now, does Jerome look like a candidate for a heart attack to you?
Nope.
No, he looks good, right?
He's fit.
Yeah, you're looking great,
fine.
Jerome. Thank you. Okay? Cheer for Jerome. Yay. Okay? So this 40-year-old friend of mine that looked like Jerome had a heart attack. And he did it the way only a 40-year-old guy can do it. He was driving home from work. He had a pain in the left side of his chest. It was radiating down his left arm. He said, I think I'm having a heart attack. This is probably my last opportunity to eat a meatball sandwich. True story. Subway had a special going, 2-for-1. So he stopped at Subway, got 2 meatball sandwiches, ate the first one on the way home to get his wife, the second one on the way to the hospital, got checked out. Sure enough, he was having a heart attack. Those are the last 2 meatball sandwiches he's ever eaten. Now, my circle of friends took inventory. We looked at Jerome, said, I think he's in better shape than I am. Okay, and so we started panicking. A bunch of my friends got gym memberships. Some of them got involved in the youth ministry. And we were just like, oh my goodness. We're going to die someday. But that was a foreign concept, a bunch of invincible guys. And then the third thing that happens is you get targeted spiritually. Because the next season we're going to talk about is actually the most significant season of life. And the enemy of your souls doesn't want you to enjoy it.
Like the bell curve for divorce is right at the end of the 40s.
And so in men in their 40s, they start hearing all kinds of weird messages. Like, you got the short end of this deal. The people that say they love you don't really love you. They're taking advantage of you. Everybody's working too hard, making you work too hard. They're just take. They don't really love you. They just use you because you're talented. You deserve somebody better in your life. And on it goes.
And that's why you'll see guys like do kind of weird stuff in midlife. You know, like they're unbuttoning their shirt and you're like, oh, please button that up, old dude. Or like they trade in wives to get a trophy wife. I'm like, you're still old guy. You just have a really cute Barbie on your arm. You can't run away from yourself. You know, and women in midlife, like we are just getting as crazy as well. And so we really have to fight for our marriages during this midlife season. One of my friends, she was married to a super conservative pastor. I mean, you know, we're talking blue jacket, red Republican tie. I mean, he was a conservative guy, and he traded all that in midlife for like a Tommy Bahama shirt with shorts. He never wore pants again. He only wore Birkenstock sandals, and he grew his hair out long. He got his ear pierced. He was thinking about getting his nose pierced and a tattoo. He wanted to sell the family van. They had 7 kids and get a Harley, and she's like, who stole my husband? Who stole my husband? And but she was wise. She went to her mentor, who's also our mentor, the Conways. And Sally Conway at that time had written You and Your Husband's Midlife Crisis. And her husband, Jim, wrote Midlife Crisis. And they actually coined that term, midlife crisis. And so she went to her and said, what is going on? What should I do? I mean, I don't even recognize this guy anymore. And my friend Sally said, look at your husband through the eyes of an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old. What traits, what attributes, what qualities would a young woman find attractive in your husband? You find those traits attractive too. Your husband doesn't need a mom right now. He needs a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. So be your husband's girlfriend. Mm-hmm. So my friend, she like rearranged her schedule to be her husband's girlfriend. And we had lunch a few months into this. And she's like, it's a lot of work to be your husband's girlfriend. I have to like shave my legs every day. And but we prayed, you know, that God would do a miracle for them. And one day he came in and he said, wow, you know, I've really noticed that you've set aside stuff to really be my sounding board and listen to my heart and be there for me, honey. And I saw the things that you set down so that you could minister to me. Hey, I think that you should pick some of those things up, and especially this one goal right here, and I'll walk alongside you. I'll help you. And she was wise enough to say, and you know what, honey, go ahead and get that Harley, because she's thinking Harley cheaper than divorce. Mm-hmm. And so they became each other's best friends in life's second half. By being your husband's girlfriend, because it's a tough time in that midlife season. Let me see if I can find this real quick.
While she's looking for that, folks, I know in Christian circles we're not really supposed to say this, but the goal of your 40s is survival.
That's right.
If you get to your 50th birthday and you're in relatively good health, you're in your right mind, you're still married, and you have a relationship with your kids, you have won. You are walking in victory at that point, and you are set up for the next season of life, which again is, in our opinion, well, actually studies show it is the most significant season of your marriage journey.
Right. So one day, I was, this is why it's so stressful on a guy. One day, I noticed how people treated my 40-year-old husband, and it was like a vending machine, you know? Give me your car keys, give me your counsel, give me your money, give me your wisdom, give me your connections, give me your time, give me your talent, give me your resources, give me your prayers, give me your muscles, give me your expertise, give me, and Bill gave and gave and gave. And so the goal is survival, and to do that, we'll talk a little bit more tomorrow about our midlife story, but the goal is to take good care of each other. So just turn to your spouse right now and say, no matter what season Let's take care of each other, or good care of each other.
We're going to blow through the next two, right? We're going to blow through these, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you didn't show the pictures.
Okay, we'll go back and show.
So that, yeah, that's us in midlife. We'll tell you more about it tomorrow.
Good?
Yeah.
Okay. So your 50s and 60s are time to be influential. Studies show, folks, and again, these don't get broadcast much, but studies show that the most influential decade of a person's life is their 50s. The second most influential decade of your life is your 60s. And this is happening because we're living longer. Like, it used to be that the expected mortality rate was down around 65, between that and 70. If you got to 70, you live long. Well, we have pushed that forward. You know, the expected age at which you're going to live is quite a bit longer. Most of you are going to live close to 80. And it's added this new season of life where you are highly influential. And again, if you were the enemy of our souls, wouldn't you try to frustrate people before they got to their most influential decade? Okay, and it makes sense. Because when you get to be your 50s and 60s, now you have real world wisdom. Like, you're not living by theory anymore. You've actually tried stuff out. Like, you know what works and you know what doesn't work. So when people ask you for advice, you speak with more authority because you've tested a lot of this stuff. Also, you've figured out what you're good at, and you've figured out what you're not so good at. And you don't have as much energy as you used to have, so you don't try to do everything anymore. And you spend more time doing what you're best at. And so all of you who are in your 50s and 60s, you have wisdom to share. It might be in the relational area. It might be in the workplace. It might be with technology. It might be with relationships. It might be with certain life skills. But you have something to share.
So who's in their 50s and 60s?
Woo.
Look at their hands are up. They've volunteered to be mentors. Look at that right there.
and there is a, I don't know if I want to call it a culture in our world today, that the generations don't want to talk to each other. Like, too many people in your 50s and 60s, you think people in their 20s, 30s don't want to talk to you. It's not true. They want to hear from you. They just don't know how to get the conversation started. Okay, and a lot of you in your 50s and 60s, you're afraid that you're going to sound ignorant because you don't understand their technology and you don't understand all the stuff. You don't have to. All you have to do is be willing to ask them, how does this work? What is that all about? And if you take time to listen and let them teach you, they're wide open for you to teach them because they want to know. And folks, I'm telling you, we live in a world where there's young people running around that are desperately asking the question, does anybody have the real thing? And if they see it in you, they want to talk to you. Okay, the key is we've got to get the conversation started. So we have some suggestions, but this is, we'll come back to this if we,
yeah.
Okay. Suggestions for you on things you can do to take advantage of this influential season of life.
First is thank God for your age. Be glad for the every wrinkle and gray hair. You've earned it.
I am so sorry.
I'll fix it.
Whoever I need to apologize to, I am so sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. And then identify the wisdom you possess so you know what you can share. Tell God that you're willing to share that wisdom and then deliberately meet with people younger than you. Like, scope out who just got married in your church and invite them out for lunch. Invite them over to your house for dinner. Show up at those baby showers. Just really put yourself in the place that the people younger than you can get to know. Wonderful you.
And I would encourage you, keep it simple. Okay, young people like to eat, especially if you're paying. Okay, so invite them out to a meal. And at the meal, don't try to be an expert. Just say to them, if you have any questions about any area of life, I'll share what I know. I may not have much to share in that area, but I will share what I know. That's all you have to say to get the conversation started. And when you give young people an opportunity to share, you're going to discover wisdom starts pouring out of you.
And Bill and I, when we were newlyweds, one of the wisest things my husband ever did was had us stand at the back of the church. We were youth pastors at a mega church. And so he would scan like the congregation, and every week he would find a new couple that had a little bit of gray, and they were like hugging or holding hands or leaning towards each other, being like all cozy and cute, and he would park us behind them.
Right. And Frank, I met you at dinner, so I would say to you, hey, you look like you're in love with her. Is this real? And if you said yes, I'd say, well, how'd you do it? And we don't have time to have that conversation at church, so you'd invite us out to lunch.
Thank you.
Yeah. And at lunch, we would just ask you questions like, what do you do first thing in the morning that keeps you guys connected? And how do you like, what habits do you have between the two of you that keep you working together as a couple? And what are the things you would never do again because it wasn't a good idea the first time, and so you'd never repeat it? And what we discovered is that all of you who are not presenters had a lot of wisdom to share if it was done over a meal with simple questions.
So one of the homework assignments that we have for you tonight is as you walk back to your room, whatever time that is, just talk about couples that you really admire that are a little bit ahead on the journey of life than you and how you might get to know them better. And if you're older than 50, couples that are younger than you that you see potential in that you could pour into. Okay, and lastly, and we'll wrap up with this.
Your 70s. If God gives you grace to get over 70, you become indelible. Okay, I'm convinced that if God gives you more than 70 years of life, your job is to start sharing the family story. Because God's been involved in your family for a long time. For generations past, God's been involved in your life, and through the good and bad. But your job, if God keeps you here, is to tell the family story so the rest of the family starts to get a picture of what God does in this family system. And again, these are my parents. This one's very personal to me because these are my parents. And my parents, I would not call them good examples of a married couple. Now they've endured. They're about to celebrate their 67th wedding anniversary. Most of my life, I ask the question, why are you together? Like, they are not really supportive of each other. They fight like cats and dogs. They're critical of one another. And they've never committed to learn life skills that would help them overcome a lot of the trouble that they have grown up in. And in my home, for four generations that we can count, when people get married, they break the relationship with their parents. So I can count on one hand the number of times I saw my grandparents. Don't know any of my aunts and uncles, have no relationship with extended family because everybody breaks a relationship when they get married. And it's a miracle today that we have a relationship with my parents and my kids know their grandparents because it doesn't happen in my family. And so I would give my dad especially low marks early on as a dad.
Like he never showed up at any of Bill's games. Bill was starting quarterback. His dad never saw him play.
Right.
Yeah.
And my dad was a stroke victim. At 48, he had a massive stroke. Left him paralyzed on the left side of his body, and he's lived with that impairment. He had his 90th birthday in April, still alive, but he's physically impaired. So he's not very mobile. Physically, these are the worst years of his life, but at 84, he started talking. Like he'd been a silent partner all these years. He started talking and telling the family story. He started telling us about our relatives that came over from Scotland. He started talking about people in Ohio who were inventors. He started talking about bicycle shops up in the Bay Area. He started talking about the problems that caused all of this fractured relationships in our family. He started talking. And my dad, now when he talks, everybody hangs on every word he shares now.
Because like the family secrets are coming out of the closet and we're like, all the pieces are starting to fall together. We're like, oh, got it.
Yep. And so my dad's best season of life in the family system has been his worst season physically. Like in the last 6 years, he's had a bigger impact on all of his family than he did on the 84 years before. And to me, he's a reminder of what happens when you enter in at the season you're at, take advantage of the season you're in, and see God's grace flowing.
And the Bible tells us, forget what lies behind, but press forward on what lies ahead. And so by focusing on, okay, how can I maximize the years I have left, Bill's dad, like, tell how he used to feel about, like...
Well, if my dad had died 10 years ago, my reaction would have been, oh, darn.
That's sad.
When he dies now, I'm going to miss a friend. And it's going to be difficult to see him go because he and I have connected at a level I never thought was possible. And so, again, it's a very powerful time of life. And the key to it, if you're in your 70s or 80s, tell your family story.
And in fact, tell your family story in Seven Simple Skills for Every Woman. I found out through research that families who tell their family story, for example, like our family story, I'm a McMillan, and we come from where our family crest, the McMillan family crest, we were the priests who ministered to the Scottish leaders. So we were the spiritual leaders. Now, Bill's family, they're also Scottish, but they fought with William Wallace.
We're really good at drinking, and we fought with William Wallace and lost, so we had to get out of town.
Right. But yeah. Theirs, it was the beer stein that was on there. So there's God redeems everything. And we found out also by doing some of the genealogy things that Bill's dad worked years on, that we have pastors way back.
Yeah.
We had no idea that Bill's parents never went to church. Bill's mom forbade him to go to church. And we're like, wow, there's generations of pastors that probably were praying for us, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so by telling your family story, studies say that your children and grandchildren will make better choices because they have a strong family identity. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you're going to have to fight for your family and fight for your family strength. And a lot of times in these different stages, there's stress of different kinds, no matter what age or stage. And so one of the things that we found out that helped us one day, we're standing and mm-hmm. I am standing in the bed and by the bed, and we were in our 30s going on 40, and I'm life is so stressful right now. What is going on? Are we doing something wrong? Are you doing something wrong?
No, I'm not doing anything wrong.
I don't think I'm doing something wrong, but this is hard.
Pam, it's not you. It's not me. It's just life.
And I thought about all the responsibility. I reflected back on some of those verses we started with. That there's a season for everything. I'm like, you're right. It's not you and it's not me. It is just life. Right.
So turn to your spouse and repeat after me. It's not you.
It's not you.
It's not me.
It's not me.
It's just life.
It's just life.
Now, don't be like this one guy that came to me and said, okay, but I think I got it. So it's not me. It's not life. It's just you. Okay, don't go there. One more time. Look at your spouse. It's not you.
It's not you.
It's not me.
It's not me.
It's just life.
It's just life.
Jesus, thank you so much for these couples that are here. Thank you for their desire to learn. Would you put your hand of favor upon them, do through them what is beyond them, and build a legacy through them that will cause people yet to be born to talk about how good you are because of the love you've given them for each other. In Jesus' name we pray.
Amen.
Amen. Danny, they're all yours.